Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Delegate-elect Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. I'm Delegate-elect to the Virginia State House of Delegates. I'll be joining them, be sworn in, actually, next January. But I have been through my own campaign, obviously, to get elected to my position. I know how campaigns work, and I know the corrupting influence of money in politics. And the question is, does it have to be pay to play? Does it have to be a culture, a reality, whereby various businesses doing business with a state, with a city, with the country, feel that they have to pay their legislators to order to be heard? Do legislators then bend over backwards to give taxpayer dollars to the corporations that pay for their campaigns? And is there any way for citizens to stop it? To help answer these questions, I have invited Josh Silver, the director of Represent Us, otherwise known as Represent US. Represent US is a fiercely nonpartisan movement to pass through tough anti-corruption laws in cities and states across America. Josh Silver, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. I'll tell you something. We just had an election right here in my hometown of Alexandria, Virginia, on Tuesday. In that election, we had two candidates. One took no funds from anyone that does business with the city. The other candidate, who happens to be the current mayor, took a lot of money from developers who could then rely on the votes of the mayor and the city council to do projects that made the developers lots of money. Now, the mayor says that, it didn't influence his judgment at all. I will tell you, the voters turned him out and turned the Werman in, the vice mayor, who doesn't take developer contributions. But let's just get to the general notion of what's the problem with people doing business in a state or city or federal government contributing to the campaigns of the people who make decisions on things that affect those businesses. What's the problem with it?
I guess if there's anybody out there who's ever watched a sporting event, this one's pretty easy. If you go to a baseball game, should it be legal for the manager of a team to give money to the umpires before the game? Because that's what's happening in American politics every day.
I mean, the umpire insists that the money doesn't influence his judgment.
Of course not. Of course not. The problem is it does. And I mean, Virginia, I hate to tell you this, you probably know.
No, I do know, but go ahead and tell me anyway.
Yeah, the Center for Public Integrity rates all of the states in our great country as to their state's sort of integrity of state government. Virginia is 47th out of 50 states. They got an F.
We were ahead of three others? Hey, that's better than I thought.
You are. You're doing all right. I think you're ahead of South Dakota. I'm not sure of the others, but
Mississippi's usually down pretty low. No, I mean, obviously that's extremely embarrassing, and I probably shouldn't even joke about it. I do know, and again, I just won my own delegate race. I can safely tell you that not a single lobbyist or PAC gave me a dime when I ran in my primary. But ever since I won my primary, before the uncontested general race, I got a lot of people that want to give me donations. Huh, they didn't want to help me get elected, but now that I am elected, now they really care. Now they really, their heart's in the right place.
Well, so let's back the lens out there a little bit, Mark. I mean, 2012 had this sort of unenviable statistic of the $7 billion election blowing away all of the previous records on campaign spending. This upcoming presidential election, 2016, projected to be a 10 $1 billion election. The average U.S. senator needs to raise $14,300 and some odd dollars every day, 365 days a year, to build an average-sized war chest to win re-election. The New York Times comes out with a statistic just recently. 158 families have provided nearly half of all of the early money provided to capture the White House. So, I mean, we're in a situation where money has completely trumped ideas and integrity in terms of the most important components of our democracy. And the end result is that we're all getting screwed. I mean, the reality is when you ask, why are we not part of a global climate treaty, it's because of money and politics. If you ask why it took 10 years to get net neutrality, that simply says that internet providers can't just, you know, sort of do whatever they want with internet content to make more money, it's money and politics. If you ask why the poor are poorer than ever, and or I should say the disparity between poor and rich is greater than it's been since the 1800s, money and politics, and the list goes on. Everything
okay, but Josh, here's here, and look, and I and just to be clear, I agree with you. Obviously, I've come out publicly for public financing of campaigns. I firmly believe in it. I do not like the corroding influence of money in politics. Sometimes I have to play the game because I'm there, and unfortunately, that's how the game is played, but I don't like it. I want to change it. But let me push back on you on a few things that I hear when I tell constituents that I support public financing of campaigns. Their response is basically, well, why should we pay for it? In other words, at least when the corporations are paying for it, you know, we don't have to. You just mentioned $14 billion. Is that the word you used for the presidential campaign? Am I getting that number right?
$10 billion projected.
That's just the presidential. That's not all the campaigns in 2016. That's just the presidential campaign.
It's all federal. It's not all state. But
it's all federal. Okay, so all federal is $14 billion. Throw in the states, you probably got $20 billion. So how do you respond to people that say, look, I don't like it. I realize that when a lobbyist for XYZ Corporation gives money to a candidate, the candidate may very well look favorably upon XYZ Corporation. But if XYZ doesn't pay, then I have to pay, and you know, I don't want my taxes to go up for this. How do you respond to people like that?
Well, I respond in two ways. I think, first of all, in terms of the merits of publicly funded elections, it's what Lawrence Lessig, the Harvard professor, talks. He calls dependence corruption. That is, politicians have become dependent on major donors because campaigns cost so much. And if you do not change how politicians secure the money they need to run for office, you don't actually change their behavior. As much as you would like to, it will not change unless you actually make them dependent on constituents instead of dependent on big money lobbyists, and public funding is how you do it. However, there's a second piece, and it's very important. Public funding alone does not fix the money in politics problem. The reality is you need to pass strong ethics and transparency and enforcement laws as well, and taken together, if you can do that, then you're solving the problem.
One of the things that you put forward, and in fact, I guess the voters in Seattle put forward, they had an honest elections referendum, an idea that I got to tell you, I have talked about publicly on the radio for at least 10 years now. Maybe, I'm sure someone thought of it before I did, but it's kind of cool because I didn't know about it, and so they sort of independently came up with the idea to have democracy dollars. They call them democracy vouchers. But basically the idea is that every single constituent gets $100 that they can spend however they want. Think about it, the presidential campaign, you've got 300 million Americans for every man, woman, and child. If each of them had $100 in democracy bucks, that would be $30 billion. That's twice as much, actually, as is currently being spent in all federal elections. So maybe we'd only need $50. But the point is that if democracy bucks are spent by voters on the candidates of their choice, suddenly people whose ideas are popular get more funding for their campaigns, more than people whose ideas are not popular. And those who are rich, well, that you get your $50 or $100 in democracy bucks. That's it. That's what Seattle had on the ballot, right?
Yeah, and here's the real advantage to the voucher, or what we call a democracy credit. There's a lot of words for it. The real advantage to it is it's the most inclusive model out there. And what I mean by that is there are currently public funding systems like New York City where I give you $100 to run for office and the city matches it 6-to-1 with a $600 grant to make it even more powerful. There's a grant style system like in Connecticut or in Maine or Arizona where if you get enough qualifying contributions, you get a big chunk of $10,000 or so to run for office. What's nice about the voucher model is that it makes it so that every single voter it gets one. And,
yeah.
And 70% of voters say they don't feel like they have enough extra money lying around to make a contribution that could get matched, like in New York. So it's much more inclusive. And more, here's what's really important. Moderate and conservative voters are more prone to supporting the voucher model because it fits more with their paradigm. It's like, if I like the idea of public funding and I want to participate, that option is open to me. If I don't agree with public funding, well, I'm not going to spend my voucher.
Yeah, but although, to be clear, you don't get to keep the money. You if you don't spend your voucher on politician XYZ, you don't get to keep the $100 because that would sort of defeat the purpose.
That's correct. You don't get to keep it, but it exercises more personal freedom and liberty, which is more in line with the kind of conservative value. So it's more popular and it's more inclusive.
So did Seattle pass it?
So here's what happened. On Tuesday of this week, there were measures passed in actually three locations, Seattle, the entire state of Maine, and the city of San Francisco. And each one passed a new law that were different from each other. In Seattle, you passed a law that limits campaign contributions from interests, special interests who spend big money on lobbying. It made it illegal for city officials to spin right out of office and take a job lobbying, and it created this voucher model of public funding. In Maine, statewide, they revitalized their public funding law that was passed in 1996. They put strict new penalties on special interests who break the law, and they increased transparency of elections. And finally, in San Francisco, a less broad law was passed that ends secret lobbying in city politics. So taken together, what's notable about these is Maine and Seattle had robust public funding laws, and it showed that you can put a broad swath of reforms into one proposal, put it in front of voters, and they are so angry about the status quo buying of our democracy or auctioning our democracy, they'll vote for it.
So how did it work? Did all three pass?
All three passed.
By what kind of numbers? Was it close?
So Seattle won by 20 points, Maine won by 10 points, and San Francisco won by 50 points. So this is big. And what it shows is that this will work. And now what we're starting to see is these kinds of models are going to be on the ballot in cities and states all across the country in 2016. And we're starting to see a trend like gay marriage or even gun rights on the right-hand side of the aisle where advocates are saying, forget Washington, D.C., let's let the voters decide and create a domino effect across the country.
Josh, I have to take a break, but when I come back, I want to talk about the legalities of all of this and whether or not in a post-Citizens United, United States Supreme Court universe, whether or not these measures can really have an effect, because after all, somebody can still drop $1 billion in on a race, right? So I want to talk about that, also encourage you folks to call in. We only have Josh the first half hour, so if you want to talk to him, call in right now, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Josh Silver. He's the director of Represent.us, Represent.us, which is fighting money in politics. Josh has an interesting background. He's a veteran election media reform executive. He was the campaign manager for one of the real early fights against money in politics, the successful 1998 Arizona clean elections ballot initiative campaign. He's a co-founder, former CEO of Free Press. He does a lot, and he's basically, I guess, on the tip of the spear of a movement to bring these kinds of reforms through ballot initiatives all across the country, in states and cities. If you can't achieve something at the federal level, let's go right to those laboratories of democracy. But I'm going to push back, Josh, with what I asked you before the break, which is that given the Citizens United ruling, which, don't get me wrong, I think they're wrong. I think the Supreme Court's wrong all the time. But given that they say that corporations can spend trillions, really, with no limitation on what they buy in campaigns, that even with your wonderful democracy bucks, which I support, what's to prevent, we can pick the person, Sheldon Adelson or the Koch brothers or someone, from just plopping a couple billion down on the state race and overwhelming the voices of your average Democratic citizen?
Well, so there's a couple answers to that. First of all, it is true that we cannot end super PACs. The only ones who can end super PACs are on the Supreme Court or a constitutional amendment, but that requires, you know, three-quarters of the Congress. And
two-thirds of the Congress, three-quarters of the states, yeah.
Three-quarters of the states. It's very hard. They couldn't get the ERA passed. So, but the reality is that federal law could actually ameliorate the problem greatly. You could pass a law, and our model legislation includes this, that would strictly limit coordination between the campaigns and the super PACs. Remember,
Josh, they have that now, so they say.
No, they don't. No, they don't. The law that dictates the coordination is like Swiss cheese, and that's why it's not enforced. And that's why.
But with a couple winks and a nod, you're okay. You just kind of like wink, wink, nod, nod. We're the Jeb Bush super PAC, not to be coordinated with Jeb Bush. We just run by Jeb Bush's lawyer and best friend.
But what people don't realize is that the law that codifies what constitutes coordination between the PAC and the campaign is Swiss cheese. It's
yeah, but Josh, how do you prevent people from talking to each other? It is his brother.
No, but
I don't mean this specifically for Jeb. I'm just talking about generally.
No, it's okay. No, if they're good questions, what you do is you can't prevent them from talking. What you can do is you could say the super PAC and the candidate campaign cannot use any of the same vendors. They can't use the same ad campaigns, the same PR shots. They can't use the same accountant services. You could say that if you've ever worked for the super PAC, you're not allowed to work for the campaign ever, or vice versa. So
how about this?
Definitely.
A lot of super PACs are nonprofit. They're funded with tax deductible, basically based on the misuse of an old IRS provision about public welfare. I won't get into all of that. How about we just have a 50% tax on super PACs? That'd be legal, right?
You couldn't do 50, but it's a good idea having
25%.
There you go. That's smart. But here's the thing. We shouldn't get away from the larger point. The larger point is every type of legislative reform that I have suggested on this show today is totally legal and constitutional, even under the Roberts Court. So you can pass these kinds. You could make all political money transparent. Because remember, money that goes to 501c4 and c6 organizations is often secret and then passed along to super PACs who actually do have to report.
Yeah, but we tried to make it transparent. We tried the Disclosure Act. It didn't pass. Josh, I'm just throwing this at you. Can you stay for another segment or you got to go?
Well, we'll stay for a minute, sure.
All right, we'll stay right after this break. Folks, you want to call in, 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Right back after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Josh Silver has graciously agreed, probably gracefully too, to stay with us another 5 minutes. Josh, I got 5 minutes to get advice from you. So I'm an incoming delegate-elect in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I'm still clean. I haven't actually been sworn in yet. I understand that you begin to lose your soul only after the swearing-in ceremony. While you've still got 2 months, while I still have my soul intact, I want you to help me find the right kind of legislation to help you. Now, let me be fair here. Yeah, you did great work in San Francisco. Sure, you did great in Seattle. Those are blue territory. Even Maine, which is less blue than Seattle or San Francisco, is still a pretty reliable blue state in Democratic elections. You just said that Virginia's 47th out of 50. We're a solid purple state. We've got Republicans controlling both houses in the General Assembly. What's the kind of thing that I, lowly freshman legislature, could propose that would get Republicans, conservatives on board and help get money out of politics? How's that for a tough question? You got 4 minutes to answer. Go.
You asked the right guy. First of all, starting point when you're talking to moderates and conservatives, it's all about corruption. It's not about democracy. It's not about campaign finance reform. It's not even about getting money out of politics. It's about fighting corruption. That's your new word. Number two, you're going to really emphasize ethics reform, transparency, cop on the beat, enforcement of the law, and that the public funding part, which is now called democracy vouchers and conservatives like vouchers, that becomes sort of a secondary message that you sort of package up within the more popular stuff.
Okay, but they say it's all this extra spending, and why should the public have to pay for stuff when we got Corporation XYZ to pay for it?
Well, if you find a revenue model that's not going to, you know, raise real estate price taxes or do something else that's overt, but figure out one of these loopholes, one of the many billions of dollars being given away to the biggest donors and biggest special interests as a result of corruption in Virginia politics to pay for it. But the point being, if you go to anticorruptionact.org on the web, you will see a menu from our federal model legislation. You will find the provisions that are needed to clean up Virginia law and introduce the thing. And at the same time, look at cities in the state of Virginia where you might be able to pass an initiative or a charter amendment at the ballot, because most cities have a way to do that.
Yeah, we unfortunately don't have enough, very little direct democracy in Virginia. Unfortunately, we don't have a way to put stuff on the ballot, something that I support, frankly, but we don't have it. So a lot of it is done through the legislature. So, all right, I'm going to talk about corruption. I'm going to talk about basically cop on the beat stuff, but you know it, Josh. You've seen it. You've called us 47th out of 50, and I don't know that that stings enough, given that we have legislators who frankly finance their campaign year after year after year through funds from lobbyists that they're not getting from the general public.
Yeah, it's true. But the reality is about 90% of the public is with you. I mean, this is an issue where overwhelming majorities of self-identified grassroots moderates and conservatives are just as incensed as progressive. This is not a right-left issue. The reality is that corruption is ranked only second only to jobs in many recent polls. This is an area where you can slice and dice all the traditional boundaries of the left and the right and make progress that you never thought possible. And it's all from the bottom up. And
Josh, can you give me a solid right-wing conservative name that I could drop that supports proposals like yours?
You've got Trevor Potter, the former FEC chairman.
Okay.
You've got Richard Painter, the former ethics attorney for George W. Bush in the White House.
All right.
And if you go to represent.us on the web, you will see a long list of conservatives who are all in on this reform.
That's good, because I got to tell you, my progressive friends, I don't think you have to convince many of us. I think we're pretty much on board. But when the Democrats in Congress propose a Disclose Act, not even to ban all this egregious money giving, but simply to disclose it and make it transparent, the Republicans shot it down and said, no, we like secret money.
Yeah, so sure. But also remember, Bill Clinton promised he was going to address this issue. Democrats had the House and Senate his first 2 years. He did nothing, sat on his hands. Barack Obama promised he would do something on this issue. Democrats had the House and Senate for his first 2 years. He sat on his hands and did nothing. So mostly all talk and no action from the Democrats. At least the Republicans are honest that they won't do anything. The Democrats just keep pretending.
Fair enough. Hey, Josh, thanks for spending the extra 5 minutes. I do appreciate it.
You bet. Have a good one.
Thanks for coming on the Inside Scoop. Let me get to your calls. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Lorna in New Mexico on line two. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Mark. I have a question. Call me naive. Where is all this money being spent for elections? Is there like a whole industry that's sprung up
sure.
to charge people running for office?
Sure.
Can they make it cheaper?
Well, I just ran for office. I'll be happy to tell you where the money goes.
Right.
And it's all listed publicly on my disclosure form. So the most expensive thing that anything has in an election is TV. Now, I didn't do TV time in this election. But that can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Just broadcast ads, cable ads, very expensive. Probably the next most expensive is mail pieces. All that shiny, glossy stuff you get in the mail, and I did quite a few of them in my campaign. That's thousands of dollars easy. Frankly, a lot of it's postage, but also design, printing costs, a lot of it going out in mail. There's money that goes out. You got your campaign manager. You got your field director. You got people who do digital media today that charge you for digital ads. You've got ads, if you do them, I didn't do them, but if you do them in newspapers and magazines, that costs money. You got to spend money on these kind of great databases that bring in all your the people who say they're going to volunteer, the people who are going to give you money, frankly, filing to make sure that all your files are in order. You've got to get the software, and you pay by the month to get that paid. You've got all kinds of contributions to state parties. I was pushed very hard to give a lot of money to other candidates because my race wasn't close. I was actually uncontested in the general, but I gave a lot of money to Arlington, Alexandria, and Fairfax, and to candidates all across the state in close races. What have I neglected? You've got people who make your signs, and people who go door to door, particularly in the last week, to get out the vote effort. Sometimes there's paid canvassers. Some people pay for robocalls to make those automated dialing. Sometimes you do a telephone town hall. Some people do events with food and money to, you know, to not money, but food to get voters out to come to meet the candidate. Does that give you some idea?
Yeah, is there any way to make that all less expensive, or do you have any models of people who have done it on a shoestring and still succeeded?
Well, I could tell you that in our current Alexandria mayor race, I'm very proud of the candidate who won. Her name's Allison Silverberg, and she was outspent 3-1. And because she didn't take developer money, and she won the race. And I think she won the race largely because the other candidate, the current mayor, did take developer money. And so I can give you a number of examples where the candidate behind did win. It is hard, though. You need a certain amount of money just to get noticed. You got to be able to afford a few mailers. I mean, there's only so much you can do shaking hands. Now, the smaller the race, you got a school board race, even to some extent my state delegate race is small enough that you can just knock on doors. I knocked on 1,200-plus doors myself personally and talked to more than 1,200 people. I actually knocked on probably 5,000 doors, but I actually talked to 1,200 people face-to-face. That cost me nothing but the gas in my car and the shoe leather. And I met people at farmers markets and at churches and synagogues. I met them in parks. That costs nothing. That's retail politics. Retail politics works the smaller the universe it is. If you've got a small town, retail politics works very well. Even my state delegate office, where I represent some 80,000 people, I've still managed, my campaign contacted personally more than 12,000 people, and then we had mailers and so forth. But the small, now on the presidential level, there's no way. And I love Hillary Clinton. There's no way she's going to sit down and talk to 300 million Americans or even 50 million Americans. It just physically cannot be done. So if you've got a campaign that's a big statewide campaign, a presidential campaign, you've got to rely on television and mailers and grassroots, but grassroots not from the candidate. They're basically volunteers. That's free. That's why we love volunteers in our campaigns. You got a volunteer, they're willing to stuff the envelopes, they're willing to go door to door, they're willing to make phone calls on your behalf. You know, it's just the cost of the phones. That's very inexpensive. But if you don't have that army, it costs money.
All right, thanks.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks very much.
Yeah, I mean, I've just done it. One of the nice things, by the way, about my show is that I can tell you as an incoming politician, I'm trying to keep my soul and my wits about me and try to remember what it was. And I'm going to stay on the air even after I start serving. I'm going to be off the air during the 2-3 months, January through March, when I'm actually sitting in Richmond and making laws. But when I come back, I'll be full of stories, and you'll be able to quiz me, and you'll be able to challenge me. I don't think enough politicians are accessible, and I promise to be accessible to you on radio. You don't have to live in Virginia. But just so that you want to know how it works? I've been there. I've been on the inside. I will always give you the inside scoop. Call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Still time to call in. We got about 10 minutes left. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Talking about money and politics, and I don't know if people actually support public financing. Now, Josh Silver says polls overwhelmingly show they do. I think voters should, but I do hear from people saying, I don't know that my taxes should go up to pay for that. Well, here's an idea. Take the same corporations, the ones that are funneling so much money to our politicians, and simply raise their taxes 1%. Now we have more than enough money. It'll come from the same people, and all of it can go to making sure that the voters decide where the money goes with their democracy bucks, their democracy vouchers. They're going to pay the money anyway, right? Why not require them to pay it in a way that the voters decide where it goes? Now, I know the reason. Corporations will tell you, no. We want you beholden to us. We want to pay it ourselves so you know where the money's coming from so you can give us all kinds of advantages, which I think is bribery. I tell you, though, it's tough. We all need the money for our campaigns. I told Lorna in detail what the money's spent on. And you get a lot more money more easily from corporations and lobbyist groups than you do from individuals. You just do. It's really easy. And frankly, I value the corporations I get, the money I get from my campaign, from unions, from Planned Parenthood, from NARAL, from civil rights organizations, from groups who have causes that I support. It's hard. And the best way to stop it is simply to end it altogether. So I'm very glad to hear what Josh Silver's doing in Seattle, San Francisco, and Maine, and hopefully in other places all across the country. My executive producer, Mark Grimaldi, actually has a question for me on air. Doesn't happen very often, but Mark, go right ahead.
So, you and I have talked about this in the past, and I remember you being the first person who explained to me before the Citizens United decision happened how bad it could actually be if it did. So I know you're fully aware of this, and when you've talked to me off air about public financing of campaigns, I believe it was you who gave me the argument of, or if not, maybe we discussed it, that when people say, taxpayers say, I don't want to pay this money, that if you look at the money it actually costs them to have these lobbying organizations affect politicians, they would save far
Well, they will save money. Well, and here's the example. All right. So you have a lobbyist, and a lobbyist might pay, let's say, $1,000 to get $1 million in special interest tax benefits from the government. All right. For the lobbyist, it's a clear win, right? You spend $1,000, you make $1 million, clear win. For the politician, it's a clear win. They didn't have the $1,000 before. They've got $1,000 now. That's going to help them finance the campaign. Clear win for politician. So who loses? Nobody loses. Well, no, the taxpayer loses. They lose $1 million. They just found some special tax break to help this corporation. Politician wins, corporation wins, taxpayer loses. If the taxpayer, instead of paying $1 million in a special tax break to the corporation, would pay $1,000 to the politician, then guess what? They save $999,000. That's a hypothetical example, but I don't think it's too far off from the present. And people tell me all the time, I had this argument on Election Day, actually, a very heated argument with a guy who said, now, are you saying that people who take this money are corrupt? No, I'm not saying people are corrupt. But I will say that corporations, lobbyists wouldn't give the money if they didn't think it had some value. Think about it. Corporations are designed to make a profit. That's why they exist. There are nonprofit corporations that are organized for religious reasons or to help people or to promote archery or bowling or bridge or whatever. They're probably not poker, but there's all kinds of nonprofits that promote, you know, the environment and things. I'm not talking about those. A for-profit corporation has a goal. It has a purpose. That purpose is profit. It's dollars. It's money. And I've long said that if a corporation spends $1 million on politicians and doesn't get anything back, the shareholders should kick out the CEO of that corporation. He wasted $1 million. She spent $1 million, that CEO, and it didn't do a damn thing. She or he, that CEO has to go. But if the $1 million did get something, if it was valuable, if it caused a politician to give them special favors, and let me tell you, corporations do believe it gives them special favors. They wouldn't be spending this money. That, my friends, is called bribery, and it's illegal. It's a felony in most cases. So we now are in the land of winks and nods. It's not quite quid pro quo. If it is, the politician goes to jail. So I got to tell you, it's not quid pro quo. It's not that you pay them money and you do what they say, but you take the money and it doesn't influence you. And I got to tell you, my friends in the Virginia legislature, they tell me if you can't take the money one day and vote against them the next day, you're not a politician. I suspect that's true. I suspect I will take money from lobbyists and then vote against their interests the next day. I have a very strong sense of right and wrong. At the same time, the whole system stinks. It really does. It's a shame we have to do things this way. I would much rather have democracy bucks. I would much rather have campaigns designed by, financed by, the very constituents that you're supposed to represent. That's the other thing that happens, right? We have money that pours into campaigns from out of state, from all across the country. We have the Koch brothers and so forth give. And there's some liberals too, although the vast majority of them are conservatives, who pour in millions of dollars to influence races. The Koch brothers may not live in suburban Maryland or rural Oklahoma or on the town council in Portland, Oregon, but if they can fund these races, they can change and actually have more power than the very constituents who vote. Money matters. I was explaining to Lorna from New Mexico. It matters. If you don't have enough money to get the word out, to get your mailers out, to get your TV ads out, if you don't have enough money to hire the appropriate staff, you're not going to get noticed. It's very hard to do retail politics, particularly if you've got a jurisdiction with lots of people in it. So money matters in politics. Indeed, they call money the mother's milk of politics, which is a pretty crass statement when you think about it. But I guarantee you, when you're looking at races behind the scenes and people say, well, how's this or that candidate doing? The first thing they say is she raising money? Is he making calls? Is she getting donors? Is he getting those lobbyists on board? Is he calling all the rich people in his district? Should that be what politicians do? Because it is. And it happens in both parties. And it happens not because politicians are bad people. It happens because that's the system we live under, because we have to sit for elections every 2, 4, or 6 years. You got to have elections. That's what democracy is all about. And someone's got to pay for those elections. And if the public isn't paying for those elections, then you're either going to have politicians funding it themselves, or you're going to have business interests and others who want to make a profit off of what the politician does funding them. I say let the public do it. Mark, your question is absolutely on point. You will save money. The public will save money if they're the ones financing elections. That's, by the way, how it's done in Europe. That's how it's done in the UK, United Kingdom, and England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales. That's how it's done in Canada. This is what democracy is supposed to be about. Representing the people, not representing the money. And as someone who's entering the Virginia House of Delegates myself, that's my commitment. I know who my bosses are. They're not the people who give me checks. They're the people who vote for me. This is Mark Levine, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.